Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same, and you'll see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Tonight, my guest is Jeff Barnes. Jeff is an author, a professional speaker, a higher education administrator, university professor, and a leadership success specialist. He has taught more than 20 different college courses in both the traditional classroom and online, including the history of Disneyland at California Baptist University. Jeff lives in Riverside, California with his family. When he's not teaching or writing, he enjoys spending as much time as possible at the happiest place on earth. In his book, The Wisdom of Walt, Jeff reveals how what began as one man's dream on a park bench one Saturday afternoon is now a symbol of success and an example of entrepreneurial leadership around the world. As Disneyland celebrates its 60th anniversary this year, it's time we learn from the legacy Walt Disney left us. Not just lovable characters and amazing theme park attractions, but the process for transforming our dreams into concrete reality so we can become the leaders of our own lives. Jeff takes his readers through a series of lessons from Walt and Disneyland, ranging from pursuing our passion to building and supporting a team. He teaches us the fine line between educating and entertaining others so they buy into supporting our dreams. He shares how Walt Disney turned his failures into future successes and what Walt's secret was that he called the four C's. Each chapter is like a storytelling ride of twists, turns, drops, summits, and surprise endings, including insightful questions to move us toward action into making our dreams a reality so every day is as magical as a day at Disneyland. And so now I welcome Jeff. Jeff, I heard you. How are you tonight?
I'm well. How are you, David?
I'm excellent. I was hoping I'd get your call. You called right at the very last second, so thank you for checking in. You kept me on my toes, let me tell you that much. So, Jeff, I've been looking over your book today. I really have been enjoying it. You know, I love the concept of how we all need to take time out to sit on a park bench and dream. Would you like to tell me a little bit about the importance of dreams in terms of transforming your life into all it can be?
Well, thank you, David, and I think that really is a very important conversation. Few people realize that most of the entire world that we experience is the byproduct of somebody's thinking. So, for example, Disneyland or even Disney World is the byproduct of Walt Disney having sat on a park bench one Saturday afternoon while his young daughters, Diane and Sharon, were riding a merry-go-round in Griffith Park here in Los Angeles. And as he was sitting there by himself with a bag of peanuts, he began to have this idea that there should be a place where parents and children can have fun together. And of course, back in the 1940s, you know, really the only thing that we knew were carnivals and fairs and amusement parks. There wasn't any such thing as, say, a theme Park. But it was in that moment that the idea and what ultimately would become the dream of Disneyland was born. And I like to think that Walt Disney wasn't necessarily special or unique or genius per se. I think we all have crazy ideas. I think we all have crazy dreams. The real key difference is, are we picking up on those thoughts? Are we picking up on those ideas? And of course, most importantly, are we taking action on them? And Walt, of course, was a person of action. And so he didn't just have this idea, but he took the steps and the actions necessary to make that dream, to make that idea a reality.
Well, action sounds like the key. And that certainly is the case with regard to anything in life. I know that I talk about that with regards to putting spiritual principles into play in our lives and becoming all that we can be. I love the way you talk about passion as an avenue towards creating or manifesting a dream. And for some people, passion is something that they're just not in touch with. And I wonder if you could speak to those people who don't have a clue.
Well, it can be difficult. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, we have this notion that we should have some sort of crystal ball and we should be able to look forward and know what our passion is and know what our purpose is. But as I write in the book, I sort of look back on Walt's life. And even though the dream of Disneyland doesn't come to fruition until Walt is actually 53 years of age, if you go back and you look at his early childhood and the way in which his father, Elias Disney had worked at the Chicago World's Fair, and the stories that Walt would tell of, you know, going to a couple of theme parks, Electric Park being one of them, in Kansas City when he was very, very young, you can see that spark of imagination, you know, this idea that he's going to be, you know, enraptured with amusement parks and World's Fairs and ultimately go on one day to build what would become the world's first theme park. But we can really only see that looking back, not looking forward. And I use the great Steve Jobs quote from his commencement speech at Stanford in 2005, where he actually says, you know, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. And so what I challenge the readers to do is, rather than looking forward and trying to figure it all out, look backwards, see where the connections are. And so for my instance, you know, I have this picture, this image from my childhood in which I was like 5 years old and I was playing with this electric train set that went around this puzzle, and it just so happened to be a puzzle, a map of Disneyland from the early 1960s. Did that make any sense to me at age five? No, of course not. But here I am, age 52, and I'm teaching a college-level course on the history of Disneyland and writing books about Disneyland. And so it makes more sense, again, looking backwards rather than looking forward. Whatever excites you, whatever connects with you, regardless of whether it makes sense to anybody else, that's where your passion lies.
Well, let me ask you a question. It may be a little bit redundant, but what inspired you to write this book or to use the theme of Disneyland to encourage people to realize their own potential?
Well, first of all, I've been going to Disneyland itself since 1988, so, you know, a little over, you know, 25, 26 years now. But I can remember going into Disney World in the early 1970s, and the second I stepped onto Main Street for the very first time, even though I was very, very young, I instantly knew that I was someplace very different, very special, very unique, and very magical. And oddly enough, when I finally got to Disneyland, the original, when I was 25 back in 1988, I actually hated it, David, partly because it wasn't what I remembered from my childhood. And then secondly, we sort of stumbled into the park on an August morning when it was very hot and it was very crowded. And the very first line we got into was a line for a brand new attraction. And it took us 3 hours from start to finish to experience that very first ride. And so when I walked out of there that night, if you had told me, man, you're going to fall in love with this place, you're going to teach a college course about it, you're going to write books about it, I would have said you are absolutely out of your mind. But a few years later, I was bringing a group of young people back, and it realized, okay, I must have missed something. So I started doing the reading, and I started doing the research, and that's when I discovered, first of all, Walt Disney wasn't born successful, quite the contrary. And then secondly, he didn't just speak the words Disneyland and it magically appear out of an orange grove here in Southern California. He faced all sorts of conflict and all sorts of adversity and all sorts of naysayers. And it was in that story and learning and discovering the history that I came to realize, wow, this is really everybody's story when it comes to those crazy ideas and those dreams that we want to realize, and then sort of recognize, wow, Disneyland, because everyone loves Disneyland and it's fun and it's a great place to escape, wouldn't it be the perfect vehicle for teaching life and leadership sorts of lessons?
Well, you talk in the book, and you just alluded to this, but you talk about the notion of failure and the importance of failure and the lessons that can be learned from that. What would you have to say about that for our listeners?
Well, first of all, when I teach the history of Disneyland class here at California Baptist University, the very first lecture that I give is entitled The Walt Disney of Disneyland, because a lot of people today don't know a whole lot about Walt. And our students, they're shocked to discover that, you know, one, he ever went bankrupt, which he did with his very first studio in Kansas City. They don't realize all of the enormous risk that he took, first of all, in coming out to California following that bankruptcy in 1923, getting the studio up and running with his brother, losing his very first successful animated character, a fellow by the name of Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, having to come up with Mickey Mouse, the world's most successful cartoon character ever, in a moment of crisis and a moment of emergency, because once they had lost Oswald, if he didn't come up with something quick, he was going to lose the studio very, very quickly. And then moving forward with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, nobody believed that America would have any interest in sitting through a full-length animated feature film. And then when he has for this crazy idea of Disneyland, nobody wants to invest in it. Nobody wants to believe in it. Even his own brother Roy and his own wife Lily said, Walt, why? Why in the world do you want an amusement park? And yet, despite all of these obstacles, despite multiple failures, and he had more failures than he did successes, Walt believed in himself, he believed in his dream, and he kept moving forward. And I think that really is a very important and a very critical lesson. If you are failing, at least you're trying. And if you're trying, chances are you're on the right path. You cannot insulate yourself from failure. You can only insulate yourself from success by never giving yourself a chance to try.
Well, I don't remember exactly what you said, but it sounded very faith-based, and it had to do with the notion of, it's in the chapter on fear and failure, I believe, and it had to do with moving beyond the shadow of a doubt. And I wondered if you could speak to the importance of that.
Well, first of all, I am a faculty member here at California Baptist University, which, of course, is a faith-based institution. Walt Disney, while he wasn't necessarily faithful in his church attendance, was certainly a man of faith. And if you go back and you look at the opening day broadcast for when Disneyland opened on July 17th of 1955, you'll note that he had people of faith giving dedication and prayers for the opening of that theme park. I think it really comes down to this idea that each and every one of us is special, each and every one of us is different, each and every one of us is unique. We are here for a reason. We are here for a purpose. And that isn't something that is unique to Walt Disney or the other geniuses that we might identify with. I believe it is true for each and every one of us. It's really a question of, do we believe in that? Do we have faith in it? And do we trust ourselves enough to keep pushing forward, believing in our dreams, and having the confidence to know that even if we're going to fail along the way, our dreams can come true if we simply have enough courage to pursue them?
Well, what are the steps towards discovering a purpose in life?
Well, again, I think you have to go back and look at what has always interested you, what has always sort of resonated or connected with you. What are the stories in your life that have sort of a common theme, a common thread, a common sort of narrative? And then I think, you know, for me, what it really came down to was really a question of, well, what would you miss doing if you were no longer here? And, you know, David, I write about this in the book because it became a really important part of my story. You know, I had this crazy idea that there should be a college-level course on the history of Disneyland, and this notion that Walt's story and the story of the park can teach us these critical life lessons on leadership and motivation and inspiration and following our dreams. And I pursued that, even though, you know, people were like, really, seriously? I mean, you teach at a real university, and yet you're trying to teach this Mickey Mouse class. You know, what is all of that about? And I faced conflict, and I faced adversity, and I faced naysayers. And after years of work, I finally had the opportunity to give the very first lecture in our History of Disneyland class, and then lo and behold, the very next day, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. And the doctor said to me, it's life-threatening, it needs to come out. It was a Friday, and he wanted me back for surgery on Tuesday. And best case scenario, if it wasn't cancerous, and we now know fortunately that it wasn't, but best case scenario, even if it wasn't cancerous, I wasn't going to be back to work for 6 to 8 weeks, which would mean my dream course that I had worked so long for was going to be wiped off the schedule, probably never to be seen or heard from again. And it was for me in that moment, which became a crisis moment, but also a moment of faith, that I realized, wow, not getting to teach what I believe about Disneyland is what I would miss most if I were no longer here. And so I looked the neurosurgeon in the eye and I said, sorry, doc, I'm not coming in on Tuesday. I'm teaching my dream class, the history of Disneyland, which, believe me, he didn't get it all. I thought he was going to kill me before the brain tumor ever had a chance. But we put the surgery off for 2.5 months so that I could teach that class, having the faith that, A, everything was going to be okay, and that, B, I really was following my purpose and following my passion. And once we got through the course, got through the surgery, and fortunately, again, it wasn't cancerous, and I'm healthier now than I have been in about a decade, I realized that this story is important enough that it's not just students in my class that need to hear it, but as many people as possible. And that really became the impetus for writing the book last year and then publishing it over the summer.
Well, this brings to mind your chapter on the four C's that I talked about earlier in the show, because I can see where two of those C's certainly came into place, and that was courage and confidence. And the other ones for the people that are listening that you talk about are curiosity and constancy. But I do believe that you say confidence is the greatest of those. Is that correct?
Yeah, Walt was asked one time, hey, what do you think are the secrets to success? And he summed it up quite succinctly. He said, for me, I think it really comes down to the four C's that you're talking about, David. And for Walt Disney, those were curiosity, confidence, courage, and consistency. And then he would back up a little bit, sort of like what the Apostle Paul does in the New Testament when Paul says it's all about faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. Walt would say, you need to have courage, you need to have confidence, you need to have curiosity, you need to have consistency. But for Walt, the greatest of the four C's is confidence. And, you know, you have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in a greater purpose and a greater passion. You have to believe that despite the difficulties and the adversity and the conflict, if you keep moving forward, good things are going to happen and your dream can, in fact, be realized.
I think that's such an important message. And certainly you epitomize that at that moment when you took that stance with a neurosurgeon. Let's talk a little bit about how the health crisis, how that affected you.
Well, it was sort of an interesting summer. I'm sitting there telling the doctor, sorry, I'm teaching this class. You're not going to touch me. And I'm looking over at my wife, who really cannot believe the words that are coming out of my mouth. And, you know, like I said, we got through that summer and taught the class. I let the students know what was going on, you know, because the doctor, you know, warned me, you know, things are going to get worse before they get better until you have that surgery. And so I felt as though I owed it to the students to give them a heads up and let them know, hey, you know, there may be some moments in class where, you know, I'm not feeling real great. And, you know, we build in field trips as part of the course experience to include a trip to Disneyland, of course, but also to Garner Holt Productions in San Bernardino, which today is the world's largest maker of audio animatronics. And so being able to get through those all-day field trips, those were going to be a bit of a challenge as well. But, you know, fortunately, everything turned out, you know, really, really well. We had the surgery on July 24th. The tumor, fortunately, was benign. I missed, you know, a good portion of work before I came back for the fall 2014 semester. And then when it was all sort of said and done, I said to my beautiful wife, Nikki, I said, you know, it's great that I got to teach this class, but I've had this crazy idea for a book even longer than I've had a crazy idea for teaching a college level course. And she, being the wonderful partner that she is, she said to me, well, if that's really your only regret at age 51, what do we need to do to make that dream come true as well? And so it was with that encouragement that we got busy writing what has now become the Wisdom of Walt Leadership Lessons from the Happiest Place on Earth.
That's awesome. I guess what I was getting at was you had this life-threatening diagnosis, not knowing whether or not you had cancer, and I'm wondering how that may have changed your perspective on life.
You know, I get asked that question quite a bit, and I think it, for me, it was really that first moment. I mean, we all know we're not going to be here for forever, you know, but the younger you are, the less real that seems. And mm-hmm. then, you know, as you get older, and, you know, I was 51 at the time, it really was that first mortal moment of, wow, I'm genuinely not going to be here for forever. And just that sense of, what am I doing with my time? You know, am I using it for the best reasons, for the best purposes? Am I using my time to pursue my passions? Or am I just sort of, you know, meandering through without a whole lot of purpose and a whole lot of meaning? And so, you know, those sorts of moments bring, you know, time into, you know, sort of a crisis, if you will, you know, recognizing that you really, you know, do need to use your time in the best way possible. And so I made sure that, you know, the class was awesome that summer. You know, we did take a trip back home to visit friends and family members that we hadn't seen in a really long time. And like I said, you know, the last sort of realized dream for me at that particular point was, I've had this crazy idea for a book, and now I, you know, finally said, okay, you're not going to be here forever. Are you going to do it or are you not? And we finally decided to do it. So, you know, again, you know, facing that difficulty, facing that adversity, really, quite frankly, just it made everything a better story and helped me get serious about who I am and who I want to be as, you know, we get closer to, you know, the end of, you know, what will one day be, you know, the final conclusion, at least of my story in my life.
Mm. Well, how long did it take you to write the book after that?
I started writing the book on the morning of November 22nd, which probably most people think of in terms of the Kennedy assassination, which as a history teacher I can appreciate. But November 22nd also happens to be the very anniversary of Walt Disney touring the property in Central Florida that would become at one day Walt Disney World. And so I got up last year on the morning of November 22nd and started writing. And because I had done so much reading and so much research on Walt Disney and Disneyland, Disney World, plus leadership, motivation, inspiration, success, I've done so much reading and research on that in the past 20 to 25 years. When I finally got serious about writing this book, it actually only took 142 days. Started writing on November 22nd, sent it to the editor on April 14th.
Wow, that's great. Well, it certainly is an impressive book. I really enjoyed it a lot. What are some of the other things in the book that you'd like to point out to people?
Well, part of what we try to do in the book is to show the readers what you experience when you go into a Disney park. So, for example, Disneyland doesn't just have rides. They have attractions, and they have attractions for the purpose of telling stories and helping readers to recognize that as human beings, other than food, water, and shelter, what we crave most our stories, and part of the reason why we feel so connected to those Disney parks, part of the reason why we keep going back to Disneyland again and again and again is because of its emphasis on storytelling, which is a really good example of why we should be using storytelling in our everyday life. So the next time you stand up to give a business presentation or the next time you go into an interview, rather than throwing a bunch of data at people, why don't you sit down and connect with them and tell a story just the way Disneyland connects with us and tells a story. There's another wonderful chapter in the book about building a berm, especially here in Anaheim because the park is so much smaller. Walt wanted to use the park for the purpose of storytelling, but of course coming from Hollywood, he was most accustomed to telling those stories in an isolated soundstage, and now he's trying to do something in a real-world outdoor environment. And he realized quite quickly, geez, what am I going to do that's going to keep the story inside the park and all of the distractions and everything in the outside world that people are trying to get away from? What am I going to do to sort of keep all of that at bay? And he ingeniously came up with the idea of when they dredged out what would become the Rivers of America, they took all of that dirt and built a 20-foot earthen berm around the park. And folks don't realize it. They talk about it all the time. Wow, I go to Disneyland. I feel so special, and there's all of this magic, and I don't think about the outside world. Well, it's because of the berm. It's because of that 20-foot earthen protection that keeps all of the magic in and the rest of the world with all of its distractions out. And again, that's a really important life and leadership lesson. Think about your dream. Think about what it is that you want to accomplish. Think about your success. And then I challenge the reader, just like Walt built a berm around his dream of Disneyland, we need to build a berm around our dreams, around our ideas, if we ever hope to see them come to fruition. And of course, the disease of our dreams are the distractions that keep us from seriously focusing and seriously working on them.
What do we do when we get distracted and we feel at dis-ease with our dreams? What are the steps we can take to get back on course?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to remind yourself, why am I doing this? And I actually have a chapter where we talk about waiting in line. Because, I mean, let's face it, when you go to Disneyland, there's a lot of magic, but there's also a lot of waiting in line as well. And what I share with the reader is if you're serious about success, if you're serious about pursuing your dream, you have to recognize not only do you need focus, but you're also going to need patience. And at some point, because it tends to be a long wait, you're going to wonder, really, why am I doing this? Why is this taking so long? You can become distracted and even forget what it is that you're working on. And that's a really good moment to sort of reground yourself and say, okay, what is it about this project? What is it about this idea? What is it about this dream that really attached me to it from the very beginning? And again, get in touch with what the end goal ultimately is and why that matters to you and why it excites you and why it brings out your purpose and brings out your passion.
So that brings you back to the confidence and faith factor.
Absolutely.
Mm. Well, would you tell people how they can get a hold of your book and how they can get a hold of you?
I would love to. First of all, the book is available on Amazon, both as an e-book on the Amazon Kindle and, of course, as a beautiful hard copy. You can find it by simply, you know, The Wisdom of Walt at Amazon.com. The e-book is only $5.99. The hard copy book regardless of how you acquire it, I personally sign each and every copy. And if you don't want to order from Amazon, you can also get it from my website, which is thewisdomofwalt.com. And again, if you order the hard copy book, regardless of whether you order it via thewisdomofwalt.com or from Amazon, I personally sign each and every copy. And I do that, one, because this is a passion of mine, David, and secondly, I believe that's what Walt would do. And I created a book, and hopefully I'm creating a practice that sort of models and emulates Walt and is something that Walt and Disneyland would be proud of.
I gather he's been your hero since you were a kid.
I have always been enthralled with Walt Disney, the way that he thought, the way that he dreamed, and again, most importantly, the way that he took action regardless.
I can remember watching him when I was a kid on the Sunday night Walt Disney show, and I loved that, and I felt so sad when he passed away because he was, what, only about 65?
He passed away in December of 1966 from lung cancer, and he died 10 days after his 65th birthday.
Okay. Well, I guess my memory's still serving me pretty well. We do have a caller on the line. Would you like to take a call?
Oh, that would be great.
Okay. This is Diana.
Hi, Diana.
Hi. I didn't get here at the very beginning, so let's see. Can you say your name and the name of your book one more time?
My name's Jeff Barnes, and the name of the book is The Wisdom of Walt, Leadership Lessons from the Happiest Place on Earth.
Oh, my grandma and grandpa's name was Barnes. That was my mother's maiden name.
Oh.
From Indiana, but there's a lot of Barneses everywhere. I've seen that before.
Well, I live in Southern California, but I was actually in Indianapolis just last week.
Oh, well, there's a lot of Barnes in Indianapolis. but you have a different story of faith than we're used to listening to. I love stories of healing and faith to do with healing, and then you even got to throw in your brain tumor. I am supposing that you were healing it and changing it in your waiting period to make it not as traumatic as it was. You know, it ended up not being cancer, but
right.
Maybe it was. Maybe you healed. Maybe you changed that tumor by the time you let them take it out. You have a lot of faith.
Well, thank you.
A lot of faith throughout your life. That's a great story, too, and that would also be a good gift, a good Christmas time gift. Perfect time to have this show.
Oh, well, thank you. I am doing presentations almost every day right now on the book, not just because it's a great book. I think more importantly, it's a very powerful message. And, you know, particularly in the work that I do with students and young people, you know, the idea that they can get a very positive message through a vehicle that they're already familiar with, especially here in Southern California, which is Disneyland, you know, that really has sort of become my passion. And I'm very interested in getting the book into the hands of as many people as possible, especially during the holiday season, because that is when we give gifts. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a wonderful publisher and a wonderful printer. And, you know, the book is, in my humble opinion, you know, drop dead gorgeous and makes a wonderful, wonderful holiday gift. But it's a gift that keeps on giving because, again, it's filled not just with Disney history and, you know, Walt Disney's life, but life lessons and success principles that all of us can follow and all of us can apply.
Yes, that was a great part. Some people do books, they pick like books on the Kennedys or books on something else, but did they put a lot of life lessons in it? Maybe, maybe not. You did. You definitely had your own life lessons and Walt's life lessons. I went to Disney World because we lived here close to Interstate 27, which you can take all the way to Disney World,
mm-hmm.
South Florida. And my children went there every year, so I could follow what you were saying pretty well.
Oh, well, thank you.
Nice guest, David.
Thank you. I've been enjoying having Jeff on the show, and I had the pleasure of being able to read a good deal of the book, which I would highly recommend. One of the things that I like about it is that it's almost like a workbook. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, Jeff.
Yeah, the way the book is laid out, each chapter starts with a quote from Walt Disney himself, and it's that quote that sort of sums up what that chapter is going to be about. And then we tell a story from the parks, either Disneyland or Disney World, and then we talk a little bit about Walt's life, and then I use the book and chapters in the book as an opportunity to tell some of my own stories, recognizing that, again, Walt most wanted to be remembered as a storyteller. He built Disneyland for the purpose of storytelling. And so just as the rides are constructed in such a way as to tell stories, I wanted to use the book to share some of my own stories, whether, you know, it was about my health or, you know, some of the experiences with my children or my wife, whatever the case may be. And then we take whatever the life lesson or life principle might be. But then most importantly, we end each chapter with what is called a souvenir stop. And if you think about going to Disneyland or Disney World, we always want to bring something home as a memory or as a keepsake for that very special trip. And so the purpose of the souvenir stop is that's your takeaway. That's your take-home exercise. That is the application. That's what we want you to remember long after you're done reading that chapter or even reading the entire book, The Wisdom of Walt. And then following the souvenir stop, we end each chapter with what's called a hand stamp story, because whenever you exit a Disney park, you can still come back later on in the day, but you have to have your hand stamp to show that you've already been there that day. And so we use the hand stamp story as sort of an emotional way of telling story in such a memorable way that hopefully it will stamp the lesson from that particular chapter in such a way that you'll remember it, and again, hopefully apply it by way of the souvenir stop long after you finish the reading.
I think that's a genius vehicle.
What an imagination. You know, but I came out of there, me and my daughter both came out of there singing, "Watch your step, step to the left." All day you would hear that. "Watch your step, step to the left," as you were getting on and off rides. I would like to hear a chapter called "Watch Your Step, Step to the Left."
Well, that's a really, really good idea, and I've come to the realization, I haven't told every story, and I haven't used every quote, and I certainly haven't given every life lesson, so we're already working on, beyond the wisdom of Walt, more leadership lessons from The Happiest Place on Earth, and I like the idea. Step to the Left could very well end up being a chapter in the next book.
Oh, yeah, because you could put a lot about that, yes.
Well, one of the things that I'd like you to talk about a little bit, you have a chapter that's called Detailing Your Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to tell us a little bit about what you discussed in that chapter or what you'd like to talk about right now?
I would. That's actually one of my favorite chapters in the book. And if you think about it, not only is it story that sets Disneyland apart from other amusement parks, but it's also the attention to detail. And so what we do in that chapter is we take the reader on sort of a mini tour, and we explore the details of the park, but we show how it's not just visual details, but there are details related to touch, there's details related to smell, there's details related to all five of our senses. And what I'm really trying to tap into there is this idea that when it comes to our dreams, we need to have the details of our dream down in very much the same way that Disneyland has the details down. We call this visualization, but again, it's not just visualization by sight. It's also visualization by way of taste, touch, smell. It's all of the senses that need to be employed. And so, for example, you know, last year my dream was to write this book and to get The Wisdom of Walt published. And so early on in this writing process, David, we actually went to Disneyland and we went into one of the bookstores right there on Main Street, and I took a picture of their bookshelf. And every morning when I would get up to write on The Wisdom of Walt, I would start my writing by meditating on the picture of that bookshelf, imagining a completed book, imagining the book being published, and imagining that book being sold on Main Street in Disneyland. And again, it's all about visualization and putting details, using all of your senses, to whatever your dream might possibly be. And so again, it's details that sort of, you know, set Disneyland apart. It's your ability to visualize and to visualize with detail that will set your dream apart as well. There's a great story in that chapter. Art Linkletter and Walt Disney were really great friends, and some of your listeners might remember that for the opening day broadcast on ABC television, again, back in July 17, 1955, it was Art Linkletter who actually hosted that show. Well, Art would go on to tell the story. In 1954, while the park was being constructed, Walt invited him to drive down to Anaheim to see exactly what it was that he was up to. Art Linkletter had never been to Anaheim before that day. And so they drive the 33 miles south from Los Angeles to Anaheim, and they pull into this orange grove that at this point is really nothing but a dirt pile and a bunch of bulldozers. And Walt jumps out of the car, and he immediately starts pointing out to Art Linkletter where Main Street's going to be, where the railroad's going to be, where the Jungle Cruise is going to be, where Dumbo the Flying Elephant is going to soar over Fantasyland. I mean, Walt knows all of the details to his dream and exactly where each and every element is going to rest on this piece of property. And the entire time, Art Linkletter is thinking, my poor delusional friend. He is going to build merry-go-rounds and roller coasters out in the middle of nowhere. He's going to go bankrupt. And of course, Walt, with the details of his dream, 60 years later, we know that Walt was right and Art, fortunately, was wrong.
That's a great story. You know, it makes me think about the importance of putting forth detail in our prayers, too, and using that as a mechanism for faith to propel our dreams into reality at a faith level. What would you say about that?
Absolutely. I mean, Scripture tells us you have not because you ask not. And I think a lot of times when we do bother to ask, we ask very generically. It's almost as if we don't know what it is that we want. And therefore, if you don't know what it is that you want, how do you know whether you've gotten it or not? And so, you know, again, the encouragement to the listeners and the encouragement in the book to the readers is to dream and to act boldly with faith and with confidence. And when it comes to that crazy idea, to put as much detail as possible. And so I would ask the listener, are you able to touch your dream? Are you able to smell your dream? Are you able to see your dream? If you need to employ all of the senses that God has already given you. In fact, the way that I put it in the book is I think each and every one of us would love to have a sixth sense when it comes to success. But why is God going to give us a sixth sense of success if we're not using the five that he's already given us?
Good point. What do you think, Diana?
All right, sounds like Diana may have left us.
No, I just was muted. Well, was that the question about sixth sense? Oh, yes, you definitely have to use five to get to six. I believe in that. For real. You know, when I was healthier with my arthritis, while I was working out is when I would do most of my action thought of creating faith expression in detail, and I healed my back that way by actually visualizing every disc and every structure in between every disc, and you know, because I'm not a person to have surgery, but I'm a person who believes in healing, but you really need to be in detail and full of faith.
Absolutely.
And action to do it.
Yep.
So you can use faith, detail, and action in different things. You know,
yep.
you used it for your book, and dreams coming true.
Yep. And today, the wisdom of Walt is real. That dream has come true. But I still use the picture of that bookcase because my next dream, see, we never stop dreaming, we never give up. My next dream is to not just have the book published, I'm going to walk into Disneyland one day, and I'm going to take a ride onto Main Street into that bookstore, and I'm going to buy my own book from that bookcase in Disneyland. I have the details of that worked out in my imagination, just like Walt had the details of his Magic Kingdom worked out when he was showing them to, you know, Art Linkletter in Orange Grove 65 years ago.
Well, let's talk a little bit about team building now, because that's something else that you get into. And for people that are entrepreneurs and trying to build a business, what kind of practical suggestions would you have as far as that goes?
Well, I think first and foremost, and again, using the example that, you know, Walt Disney, you know, gives us, you know, Walt had the idea of a place where parents and children could have fun together. And eventually that would become the dream that we know of today as Disneyland. But he would go on to say, quote, "You can design and create and build the most wonderful place in the world, but it takes people to make the dream a reality." Whatever your dream is, whatever your crazy idea or notion might be, you simply cannot do it alone. You are going to need people alongside you. You're going to need a team to help you accomplish it. And so when we look again at Walt's example, well, I think first and foremost, Walt was very unpretentious. He was one of the most famous people in the world. He's one of the most successful people in the world. He abhorred it when anybody referred to him as Mr. Disney. He always insisted that everybody call him Walt. And that legacy lives on today. If you go to Disneyland or Disney World, pay attention to the name badge on every single cast member. You will only ever see a first name. That's how Walt built the park, and that's ultimately how he would go on to build his team. Secondly, excuse me, one of the fun features at both Disneyland and Disney World is as you walk down Main Street, pay attention to the windows, because there's names and stories in each of those windows. And if you're not really paying attention, you might not realize that something very important is going on there. Those are really thank you notes. Those are credits to the people who helped build those parks. Those are credits and thank you notes to the team members who helped make Walt Disney's dream come true. So first of all, he recognized he needed a team. Secondly, he was just another team member, whether, you know, it was Walt or David or whatever the name might be. Everybody goes by their first name. And then third, he gave credit where credit was due. He gave recognition where recognition was due. Yes, the park might have his name, i.e. Disneyland or Walt Disney World. He couldn't do it alone. And so, you know, you have to take care of your team. You have to get them to buy into the dream and the passion that you're trying to create. And you have to recognize they need to be thanked and they need to be recognized along the way.
Well, that all speaks of the mark of a humble person and, you know, somebody who recognizes that, as you say, you can't do it alone. And we are all part of a greater whole than just you and I, and it's so important to recognize other people and to remain humble if you're going to walk a spiritual path in life as well.
Yep. Walt would say, "I don't pose as an authority on anything at all. I follow the opinions of the ordinary people I meet, and I take pride in the close-knit teamwork within my own organization." You have to really – God has surrounded you with the people that are in your life for a reason. And most likely that reason is so that you can follow your passions and you can fulfill your purpose. So, for example, if it weren't for my beautiful wife, the wisdom of Walt would not exist, because she was the encouragement for me to finally help make that dream come true. And then, you know, take it a step further. Sure, I did the writing, but I also had an editor, and I also had a printer, and I also had a publisher. And as the book becomes more and more popular, it's people like you, David, who help me get the word out. So again, our dreams only become real when we recognize it's not all about us. it's not just our dream. Other people have to buy in and become part of the story as well.
That's a great testimony. What else would you like to talk about as far as the book goes, Jeff?
Well, I think there's another important chapter that is really significant, especially here in the month of November as we come up on Thanksgiving, and that is the chapter entitled Using Force Perspective. A lot of people don't realize it, but when you walk into Disneyland or when you walk into Disney World, the architecture isn't like what you would experience in a normal American city. The Imagineers use a technique known of as this force perspective, in which the first floor of those buildings on Main Street are built anywhere from 90 to 100% scale. But then the second floor is built to three-quarters scale, and then the third floor, assuming that there is one, is typically built to half scale. And the reason why they did that, well, first of all, Walt wanted the entire park to be built at a 5/8 scale. He wanted it to have a storybook feel, and the engineers had to come in and say, look, Walt, real people are going to be going through these buildings in real time, and they have to, you know, stand the course of time, you know, with 100,000 people going through here every day. And so the compromise, okay, well, the first floor where everybody's going to be, we'll build those to full scale, but then you'll get your storybook element by letting the second floor be smaller and the third floor be even smaller after that. Well, what does that mean for our own life? Well, think about your dream for just a moment. Typically, when you have that crazy idea, the very first thought, the very first notion that comes into your head is, well, who am I to think I can do that? Well, who am I to think I can overcome all of the difficulties and all of the obstacles and all of the adversities that are between me and the realization of that dream? But what I do is I challenge the reader to use force perspective and in turn sort of turn their life upside down. And what exactly do I mean by that? Well, first of all, the first floor, the ground floor of your life needs to be one of gratitude. In other words, stop for a moment and fully appreciate everything that you already have, everything that you've already accomplished, everything that you've already been blessed with. And then the second floor is whatever your next might be, that dream, that crazy idea, that accomplishment that you've yet to achieve, the success that you're still striving for. And then the third floor, which now is the smallest floor, those are where the challenges, those are where the conflicts, those are where the obstacles, that's where the adversity goes. But if we're honest with ourselves, typically we go through each day in the exact opposite fashion. All we talk about are the difficulties. All we talk about are the challenges. All we talk about are the adversities. And if all we do is fill our life to that full scale with the challenges and the obstacles, we're never going to get anything built. And so, again, using force perspective to sort of live that inverted life and start out with gratitude, start out with thankfulness, and then make whatever the challenges and the difficulties and the obstacles, make those the smallest part of your day rather than the largest part.
I'm a strong believer in gratitude and counting blessings each step of the way, and I so believe that that is actually the gateway to further abundance of dreams. When I focus on what is satisfying my life, it seems to attract more things to be satisfied about. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. You know, it's a bit of a cliche to have the so-called attitude of gratitude, but that's absolutely where we need to start. That needs to be, you know, the ground floor. And, you know, life is not what happens to us. Life is how we respond and how we react to what happens to us. And my encouragement is to always react and always respond with gratitude first, and then tackle whatever the difficulty, tackle whatever the challenge might be, you know, in a much smaller scale rather than making it the biggest thing and the only thing that you ever focus on.
Do you think it's helpful to maintain an objective stance when it comes to the latter?
I think it is, and the reason why I say that is, you know, this is not Pollyanna, oh, you know, just think positive and everything will be okay. You're going to face difficulties. You're going to face adversity. You're going to face failure. And again, that normally is a good sign that you're on the right path as opposed to no path at all. One of the things that I like to say is if you're going to live your life like a story, and we all love story. Again, that's why we keep going back to Disneyland. It's why we read books. It's why we go to the movies. If you're going to live your life like a story, you're going to have to embrace conflict. Because if you don't have conflict, you don't have a story. Think about it like this. The bigger the dragon, the better the story. And so, again, if you're objective and recognizing, all right, time to go out there and slay some dragons, you're only making for a better story, and your dream is on the other side of slaying that dragon.
And it's that conflict that leads to the contrast that helps us identify what we like and what we don't like.
Absolutely.
And then that helps us determine where we should go or should not go.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I go back, again, Walt wasn't born successful, and he had far more failures than he did successes. So, you know, you go back to when he lost Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, and, you know, really could have lost the entire studio very, very quickly. And he wrote this telegram back to his brother in Los Angeles as he was coming back from New York without any character at all. And this is what the telegram says. Leaving tonight, stopping over in Kansas City, arrive home Sunday morning, 7:30. Don't worry. Everything okay. We'll give details when I arrive. Walt.
Mm.
Everything okay. That's confidence. That's faith. That's courage. That's perspective. A lot of people today, probably starting with me, you know, if I had my first successful character stolen out from under me, I'd be calling my attorney first and texting my shrink second. Walt sends a telegram. Everything okay. We'll give details when I arrive.
That's such an important lesson, to have no worries, to leave doubts behind, and to have faith only. And that seems to be probably the paramount challenge for all of us. And yet when we can stay in that place, then we can actually move mountains.
Yes.
And obviously Walt did that with his life, and it certainly sounds like you've moved some mountains with your own, Jeff. Do you have any closing words that you'd like to say?
First of all, thank you for the opportunity to be on the show. I've really enjoyed it, and thank you to the caller. I enjoyed, you know, talking to her from Indiana. And again, reminding the listeners, we all have a dream, and whatever that dream might be, Walt Disney and Disneyland can motivate you and inspire you and literally show you how you can make those dreams come true. And so I look forward to finding folks either at thewisdomofwalt.com or personally signing a book and sending it out when they order The Wisdom of Walt by way of Amazon.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's been a joy to have you today. And I think that, you know, your closing words talked about inspiration and how important that is to all of us, and how we can lead by the example of our lives to be shining stars of inspiration to each other. And hopefully that will help us model those behaviors and attitudes and beliefs that we want others to remember us by and leave a legacy of triumph in our lives, because we have been talking about transforming our lives in different ways, and ultimately we're all victors if that's the choice that we make for ourselves. So thank you.
Yep, success is a choice. And David, it's been a real pleasure. And I'll say to you what I say to everyone else, never stop dreaming.
I won't, trust me.
All right. Thank you, David.
You're welcome. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we allow it to be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.
We're now broadcasting on Sunday, Monday, Thursday, and Friday, and the shows are podcast on Blog Talk Radio as well as FreeSpiritBroadcasting.com. Have a good night, and God bless.